What I was saying before, and those are great things to be grateful for, is we're starting off a brand new year. And before you know it, it's going to be tax season. And I'm thinking to myself, self, wouldn't it have made sense to have a CPA on the show today? Is somebody calling in?
I think so, yeah.
You know what? Let me get that. You know, they have, who's calling during the show here? Hello, this is David Crossan with The Lighter Side of Finance.
Happy New Year. It's Chris Whalen, CPA.
Well, what a coincidence. We could use a good conversation with a CPA today. How are you, my friend?
Good. I just got finished cleaning up from the New Year's Eve ball dropping, so I'm getting ready for tax season now.
I bet. And what I was mentioning before is here it is, the start of a new year. But, hey, we're past 2019. Now is a time that the different tax documents come in the mail, getting everything gathered. But, Chris, this is perfect timing because I really want to take a good look at starting 2020, any changes that we need to look out for. And one of the topics I wanted to ask you about was any tax changes for independent contractors. And, Chris, if we could start off this way, is to, for tax purposes, define what an independent contractor is and any tax issues they may have going forward for 2020.
Right. Well, there's been a lot of items in the news, and there's something called the Sweeney Bill that's out there now. A lot of my independent contractors know about it. So what's happening is that the laws in New Jersey to define whether you're an independent contractor or an employee have been very vague for a long time, much more vague than federal rules. So what that means is that the state could come in and suddenly say that your independent contractors are really employees and you need to pay unemployment and disability on them. And so, but this new bill, the Sweeney Bill, is going to make that even more onerous. So what I've been telling independent contractors, but especially the people that hire them, is please don't fall for this hysteria. If you have a good independent contractor who is a valid business and in my professional mind meets certain criteria, then you should fight it if this ever comes up with the state. So I wanted to go over a few attributes. There are people who are really employees that really aren't a business. So that does happen also on the flip side. But in this case, I'm just going to go through some basic attributes of an independent contractor, such as myself. So for example, you have multiple clients, right? Independent contractors usually have multiple clients at the same time or overtime. Very important. If you're consistently working for one person close to full time, even if you're an LLC or a corporation, it's very hard to not be considered an employee in certain circumstances. For another example, businesses have business cards and websites. Businesses do marketing. I urge everyone who is an independent contractor who might be worried about being misclassified, be sure to give the people paying you a form W-9. That's separate from a W-4, which I'm going to get into later for employees. But a W-9 form says, I am an independent contractor. Here's my business name. Here's my federal ID, so you can give me a 1099. That's one of the best ways to know you are an independent contractor, right? If you get a 1099. And also, if you are paying vendors, paying independent contractors, be sure to get a W-9 from them and be sure to issue 1099s for them. That's a really good way to prove that you feel that these people are verified independent contractors. Independent contractors have contracts, right? Employees do not. Think about it. Employees come and work as long as you'll keep them or they'll stay. There is no contract. So if you are someone working on a contract basis with engagement letters and contracts that have a definite termination date, then, of course, that is a great attribute to say I'm not an employee. Independent contractors will give invoices, right? Employees do not. Independent contractors have insurance. They have detailed business records. They file business returns. If anyone has any questions about this to make sure that you are truly an independent contractor and want to present yourself, reach out to me via my website or my phone number.
Chris, I appreciate that. And actually, you brought up an interesting point I wanted to talk about today with when it's coming to the brand new tax form, the W-4, because we don't have the exemptions that we had in the past. Now, this form is something that would need to be filled out. Can you explain what that form is and the impact going forward?
Yes. So everyone's used to a W-4. You go for a job, you put down single or married, and you put down a number of exemptions. And everyone used to know that if I was single zero, the amount that I had withheld was the highest, and you used to be able to increase your exemptions to reduce your withholding to make it more in line with what your tax situation was. So they've eliminated exemptions, which means there's no more exemptions on the 2020 W-4. So the form is very complicated and cumbersome. It'll take four times as long to do. So I urge everyone to go to my website, go to my the memos page, and you're going to see right on my memos page, it's a podcast that talks about the 2020 W-4. And if you have any questions, I urge everyone to call me. You really need to listen to this podcast, because if you're filling out a new W-4 and you follow the instructions as given, many of you will be under withheld. And just like in 2018, we had that problem. So do not fill out a 2020 W-4 unless you reach out to me and I can show you my podcast and explain what you need to do right now.
So, Chris, if you don't mind, for people that do want to see an example on your website, would you be kind enough just to give everybody the website now? Of course, we'll address that at the end, but I think it's important for people that may just want to get the visual, if you will, go to a website and take a look at what you're talking about. What would be that website?
Sure. It's chriswhalencpa.com. So chriswhalencpa.com. And you're going to click right on the memos tab right in the menu. You'll see it. And you'll see that podcast is maybe a half a page down. Podcast, the 2020 W-4 is here. So if you go to my website, go to the memos tab right there in front of you, you'll see it. And you have just scroll down a little bit, you'll get to hear the detailed podcast on this.
Well, I appreciate that, because I know myself, I need to see something and an example, and being able to go to your actual site for continuing with this conversation for people to get more educated on these changes. It would be covered. That would be a good place for people to use as a guide, if you will. And Chris, I'm going to shift gears a little bit about cryptocurrency. There's so much talk about it, and looking at people that may possibly exchange from one cryptocurrency to another, does it create any taxable events for them? So, Chris, if you don't mind starting off kind of explaining a little bit what a cryptocurrency is, as well as if they exchange, if an individual exchange from one cryptocurrency to another, are there any tax consequences for that?
Right. Everyone's heard of Bitcoin by now, and Bitcoin is a digital currency. It's not a physical currency like we have U.S. dollars. And it's gotten a lot of controversy, but there are different types of cryptocurrencies. There's Bitcoins, there's Ethereum, there's a lot of different types. And so what people do is they'll put cash money into an exchange, and then they'll buy Bitcoin there, and then they'll be exchanging it for other coins to speculate. So people don't realize that when they do that, when they take their Bitcoin and they buy Ethereum or another coin, that is a taxable transaction. And people are sort of day trading with this stuff and don't realize. Many people believe only when they take cash out of that exchange where they're doing that trading is there a taxable event. That's not true. And the IRS is very interested in this. And all of the exchanges where you're doing these transactions, just like a brokerage house will, are going to be reporting it on a 1099. So you could be you could have put $10,000 into an exchange, but you could have traded $1 million if you think about it. Every day you're going back and forth. So it's very important to not ignore your crypto transactions. You need to get them on your tax return like any other capital gain or loss.
Okay. Chris, let me ask you about this. This is something that you and I have spoken about in the past, and I just want to make sure that the listeners have a good understanding about how they may be impacted if they have rental properties. Before you know it, it's going to be the summer season, and people that have, a second home that they rent out during the summer time frame, that there was talk about a sales tax from New Jersey for a short-term rental. Can you get into that? Is it still in place? And if not, what changes have we seen?
Well, they've repealed that last summer for if you personally are renting it. So if the original law stated that if you're an individual having a short-term rental under 90 days, that you needed to collect the occupancy tax and the sales tax, which approached 12%. So they removed that for individuals, but it's still in place. If you use Airbnb or what's called a transient space marketplace, then they need to collect the tax from your customer. So it doesn't come out of your pocket at the end, but remember that if you're competing with a neighbor that also owns a property similar to yours and they don't use Airbnb, for example, well, then you're going to be less competitive because if the rental is the same, let's say $1,000 per week, if Airbnb is your source to rent this or who you're using to manage it, then your customer will be paying it almost 12% more than your neighbor if they're renting it out themselves. Or if your neighbor uses a real estate agent, you also don't have to pay the tax.
Well, that's important because a lot of our listeners do have summer properties that they do rent. I appreciate you clearing that up for us. Since, Chris, we're talking about it's tax season before you know it, April 15th will be here, and people at this point are getting their different tax documents in the mail and thinking about the different write-offs that they may have that they may not be aware of, and especially for the seniors that are listening on today's show. Any write-offs that people may not be aware of that they should consider giving to their particular accountant to be able to write off?
Right. Well, there's a lot of things that are big ticket items that people don't realize. And just to back up one second, the medical deduction is limited on federal, right? There's a 7.5% number. So let's say you make $100,000. The first $7,500 of medical is not deductible. So some people ignore it, but that's much lower in New Jersey. So no matter what, you still want to accumulate all your medical expenses. So for example, if you get an air conditioner, HVAC, that we can say has to do with the relief from allergies or other respiratory problems, a mattress, if the doctor writes a note for a certain kind of mattress, which is of high ticket items, right? If you need to get cosmetics, surgery for some reason that is medically necessary, and you'll be surprised how many of those can be. So you should always be talking to your doctors about, I want to get cosmetic surgery. Can we? Because a lot of those are not deductible as medical, right? But some of them can be if we have a physical reason that we need it, not just cosmetic, right? Dietitians, right? You can go to a licensed dietitian, and that could possibly be deductible, and that could be expensive. Drug addiction treatment, even the meals and lodging for that at a therapeutic center. Extra rent or utilities for a larger apartment, if you need to provide for a space for a nurse or an attendant. So you have people who have an elderly parent and you have to build out the house for them. And also they might need a caregiver space, right? So that's something that's costly that I'm trying to pick the bigger ticket items here that your constituency here or listeners might be exposed to, right?
No, that makes sense. Yeah, go ahead, please continue.
Remember, legal fees paid to authorize treatment for mental illness. I know that might sound a little out of left field, but you could have a son or a daughter or a parent, and you need to go to court to get control over, you know, to have get power of attorney over them. So imagine you have a child that you need to bring to court so they can be forced into treatment. Well, that's very expensive, but that might be considered a medical deduction, right?
Okay, now that makes sense. And Chris, let me ask you this. With business owners, when it comes to auto deductions, any suggestions for them?
Right. Well, the main thing is people don't realize whether you lease or buy a car, the mileage that's used for business is the basis for the deduction. So and the beginning of that calculation of that deduction is total miles. And so people usually don't have the total miles. So what I have my clients do, and this is a really good time of year, it's still early, take a picture of your odometer on the first of the year of all the cars you use for business, because then we're going to have a definite total miles, which is fantastic. And that can help go a long way if the IRS is auditing you for your mileage expense and records. So it's just a little trick I use, but all my clients do that. And some people say they get their oil changed, they can go to Jiffy Lube and get the history. That doesn't work. You want to have the beginning and end of the year. So we're still at the beginning of the year. Go out this morning in your slippers and go and take a picture of your odometer if you're using a car for business.
Chris, I want to end on this, you know, looking at the last couple of years with the Trump tax changes, from the clients that you're working with, how have they been impacted overall?
Well, overall, it's been fantastic. 95% of people are doing much better than they were, especially the middle-income families and businesses, everything from the qualified business income deduction to reducing rates. So my clients have saved a couple of million dollars overall. I analyzed my 2018 returns. So there's no doubt, listen, I know people are hear the word Trump and they need a safe space, but I'm just, from my expert perspective, trust me, that the middle class has done fantastic with this, and the rich haven't benefited more. They've definitely gotten a break, but it's relatively much lower than what the middle class got in terms of a percentage break on their taxes.
Chris, I really appreciate you taking the time and calling in today. Before we finish up with the show, please let our listeners know how they can reach out to you if they need assistance.
Sure. My main phone number is 732-673-0510. My website is also a great way to learn about me and reach out to me. It's, again, chriswhalencpa.com or chriswhalencpa.com. I look forward to hearing from all your listeners. I always get a great response, David, so thanks so much for having me on.
Chris, always a pleasure, and the band always interrupts us at the worst time. Thank you so much. My phone number, 732-657-3089. Of course, go to my website, www.davidcrossan.wfadv.com. Go on there, look at different articles and videos on investment and estate planning strategies. Have an amazing week, and let's talk next time. Take care.
The Lighter Side of Finance is a paid program. The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily represent the views and opinions of the staff and management of this radio station or Town Square Media, LLC. The purpose of the program is to provide information only. Any financial transaction could only be recommended by a knowledgeable professional who is familiar with your financial situation. Wells Fargo.